Les colloques du Collège de France.
We are about to start the second session of this morning. My name is Bruno Locatelli, and I'm going to moderate this session. In this session, we'll have three talks, and the first speaker will be Peter Battari. Peter Battari is a research group leader at the Center for Ecological Research in Hungary, specializing in conservation-oriented landscape and spatial ecology within the environmental sciences. In his landscape and conservation ecology group, he integrates agroecology and urban ecology to assess how landscape patterns and management can align biodiversity conservation with production and development across urban and rural systems. Peter, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Bruno, and special thanks to Sandra. I really feel honored to be invited here. And in this talk, I would like to emphasize the importance of landscape configurational heterogeneity, not only landscape composition. So let's start with that, what you, I guess, all know, that our planet is under serious pressure. I'm very much concerned that the most important global change driver is land use and land cover change. So on this map and on the right figure, you can see that roughly half of the habitable Earth surface is covered by some kind of agriculture. By the way, 3% is covered by urbanization. And with Dorota Kotowska from my group, we just published last year this below figure with this pyramid. On the left side, you see land conversion. So when you from a natural system, for example, from a forest, you create a grassland, from grassland, a cereal field, from cereal field, let's say, urban area, any kind of complete conversion of the land use. On the right side, you see land use intensification, where you have a given ecosystem, but you intensify it. So instead of natural forest, you have plantation forestry, or instead of diverse grasslands, you have single species dominated, very intensively used grassland, and so on. And what you can do on the top, in the more natural system, you can focus on conservation. And in the middle, you rather focus on sustainable management, and in the bottom, you should consider, if you are not in a trap, in a humanity trap, then you can focus on restoration. And there are the other four major global change driver affecting this. So this guy, Norman Borlo, got a Nobel Prize for developing basically the dwarf and dry resistant wheat to be able to increase the yield production to fight hunger, because after the Second World War, also here in Europe, everywhere, everybody was starving. So there is still an increase in yield production per area. But even though we have now genetic editing, still 800 million people are malnourished and starving. So, but you, I guess, all know that the major problem is the serious social inequity. So today, agriculture is heavily based on industrial conventional farming with high input of agrochemicals, and still we see losses in staple crop. Staple crop is what we usually need for our everyday of life. Here in Europe, cereal, in Asia, rice, etc. So this comes with several externalities on environment and nature, serious decline in biodiversity, and the SDG2, Sustainable Development Goal of the UN, says that we have to end hunger. And of course, in EU, we try to go and do against it. So the EU Green Deal targets a reduction of 50% of pesticides until the end of this decade, and also an increase of organic agriculture. We do think, and we have written two, three papers about the importance of landscape ecology. What I want to focus now, I hope that some most of you know, but here a short introduction to landscape structure. So when we take a look at on a map, you can digitize it. What I did in early of my career, working on the nice pusta grasslands, extensive nice big grasslands in Hungary, and then you can delineate an area and measure what percentage is this pusta grassland or arable land and so on. This is landscape composition. This is how much is available for a given patch type or land use type, and it has nothing to do how large these are, how many pieces are of them, what is their spatial arrangement, and this is all described by various measures in landscape configuration, in the book also what Sandra mentioned in the beginning. So what we do in our group, we very often focus, and you can distinguish so-called intensification and fragmentation studies. On the left side, these intensification studies focus on converted environment, on intensive farmland or in urban areas. At the local level, we very often measure how intensive is this local use, and at the landscape level, we very often measure only the landscape composition. So what is in the landscape, the percentage of arable or cropland, what is the sealed impervious areas in urban land. On the right hand, we also do fragmentation studies. This can be fragment of grasslands, what I will show, or even parks in cities. So the remaining semi-natural fragments, we measure their quality, their size, and very often how isolated these are with the configuration metric. What I find most fascinating, the interaction of these effects at the different spatial scales, how do they interact, amplify, or neutralize each other effects on biodiversity and ecosystem services and functions. So put all this in a framework. What we have in Europe, we usually have at the local scale land use or management. Most land is managed in Europe, but we also have natural disturbances, and this created our landscape. So we have landscape composition, we lost a lot of habitats, and these are characterized as landscape configuration, the natural habitats as patches which are isolated. And all these have effect, for example, on the abiotic and biotic environment. Imagine a forest next to a cereal field. If you cross the border, you will see that the abiotic conditions, for example, light is changing. This has an effect on the plants, their structure, their flowers. And this, of course, obviously has an effect on the ecosystem function providers, in this case, for example, the pollinator diversity, and also their behavior. How do they move? And ultimately, this have an effect on the ecosystem function, the pollination of white plants, or the pollination of produced plants, for example, strawberry, as an ecosystem service. And this can give us a feedback to the economics and politics. We can create new incentives, agreemental schemes, and so on. So let's now start the first case study with habitat fragmentation. Just very quickly, I introduce you the habitats in southern or in central Germany. We focused on calcareous grassland fragments. These are on calcareous shallow soil, very diverse in plants, nice orchid species and so on, but they are very fragmented. And in Hungary later on, we also sampled these steppe fragments on sandy soil, embedded in a matrix of plantation forestry with non-native species of black pine. Or we also focused on these very interesting so-called ancient burial mounds of kurgans. In Hungary, you can find still 2,000 of them. And if you go to the east until Kamchatka, you find something like 500,000. But similar burial mounds you cannot find here, for example. And these are also protected, relatively small, and contains the local flora and fauna. So what we did in the German study with my PhD student, she was very much interested in leafhoppers, species you can see here. We sampled them by sweep netting, and she also surveyed the plants. She published nice studies from that. Later on, I decided to make an additional study of that, because we know from leafhoppers what they are feeding from the literature. So there are monophagous, specialist species, oligophagous feeding on few species, or species which are generalist and feeding on many polyphagous species, and therefore I could create all fragments such a network. And we had fragments small and large, and they were embedded in agricultural landscape. And then they also had a gradient of connectivity. So what Verena found, my PhD student, if we have large fragments which are better connected, then there are more and more specialist species. But if they are small and better connected, then the generalists will dominate. And I found the opposite pattern when you investigate the interaction diversity. So of course, if we are in a large, along a gradient of large fragments, which are dominated by specialist monophagous species, then the interaction diversity will be decreased. So this is why the title of this paper was Increasing Connectivity in Haensis Habitat Specialist but Simplifies Their Food Webs. Of course, when I established my group in Hungary, we did similar studies on these burial mounds and these other pusta fragments, and we found similar patterns for connectivity for specialist spiders, and also, of course, as you expected, there were more on large fragments. But later on, we decided to move a little bit towards invasion ecology. And unfortunately, this very nice plant, this is the milkweed, this is the well-known food plant of this big Danais butterfly, which migrate in North America, you might know. This gives a very good honey, but unfortunately it invades our very nice grasslands, as you can see here. And in a structural equation model, so in a pass analysis, we analyze their effects. So, interestingly, when you look at only the species richness, it had a positive effect on the different taxa. However, I don't show now, if you look at the specialists, then there were negative effects. So now let's change the topic. And two co-authors are present in the room of the study from the Framland project. Lenore Farik had a very nice idea how to increase and maintain farmland biodiversity without taking land out and making new nature, whatever. So one idea is to increase the landscape composition by increasing crop diversity. So you plant more and more different crops, or you make your field smaller and smaller. This is the axis of landscape configuration. And I was lucky to supervise here two PhD students, Annika Haas and Ali at Biode. I show only the pollination study of Annika Haas. So we sampled by these pen traps the pollinators. And we also have a radish plant as a phytometer plant. So you plant radish in a greenhouse, you bring it out, expose it to the nature, to the pollinators, they pollinate, you bring it back to your greenhouse, and then in the end you count how many seeds you have. So again, you can see a pass analysis. I won't explain the whole story here, but let's focus on landscape configuration effects. So if you have smaller and smaller fields, yes, we have more and more bees as we expected. You can see it on the scatter plot. This was true also for France. And if we have more pollinators, then we have more seeds in the pots of the radish plant. What was a surprise, a little bit surprise for us, that composition heterogeneity had a negative effect, as you can see on this scatter plot. But this was caused by the maize. So we realized if maize is coming in the plate, which increases the compositional heterogeneity, but it has a negative effect because it's a late plant and it's relatively empty of edible white plants, so not providing resources for pollinators. So the title of the paper, which is the conclusion, Landscape Configuration Heterogeneity by Small-Scale Agriculture and Not the Crop Diversity, maintains the pollinators in Europe and also the plant production, we think. Now let's switch again topic. I was working 11 years and living 11 years in Göttingen, very close to the former border. I come from here, from Hungary, very close to the border of Austria. And this is a legacy of communism. In communism, all land were taken from the farmers and large fields were created. There is a magnitude order of difference still when you cross the former Iron Curtain. So there are many differences, but this is a very obvious one, what you can realize if you open Google Earth or something. And then here I show our main finding. We sampled, as very often, multitaxa, so plants and different arthropod groups, and we measured, we sampled them in organic and conventional wheat fields in both sides of the Iron Curtain. As you would expect, there were much more individuals and species in organic farming. The most interesting thing is how this figure, this is a so-called accumulation plot. So let's take one large field from the Eastern German system, a conventional one. We had 50 species roughly, then add in the next poorest field, and then you count how many species you have, the next poorest field, and so on. So you create these. What you can see that the green lines, the organic ones, are always higher, but the interesting thing is that in West, in the conventional fields were better in beta, in diversity than the organic one with similar size. The nine small fields is higher than 3.5 big fields in East. Of course, this paper was interesting because we also asked farmers about profit and yield. Yield is twice as high in conventional field, as you can see, than in organic one. Same in both sides of the Iron Curtain, but the profit is much higher in East, because in East they still have larger farms, and because of scale of economies they have better marketing possibilities and therefore a higher revenue. And we concluded that contribution of small-scale agriculture to biodiversity was more important than organic management. Okay, and now I come to my last case study, what I want to show you quickly, and these are villages. And why do I show it to you? Villages are very often in agricultural landscape. No one cares with villages. Urban ecologists go to cities, agroecologists go to the fields or to grassland, forest ecologists to the forest. There is virtually no studies. Here in France you have, I checked, 20,000 villages, no research basically on these. And villages, as a definition, is something like 200 to 2,000 people with a group of houses and some public buildings. And I was lucky to lead a bigger project here, where we studied 64 villages around 16 mid-sized cities in Hungary and Romania, all together with six research groups. And we had a design that next to each of the 16 cities, we had always four villages, either in agglomeration, in the agglomeration close to the city or far to the city. This is a configuration metric. Or the villages were embedded in agricultural landscape or in forested landscape. This is a landscape composition metric. So also to show you the design once again, so we had an increasing forest cover. The village was embedded in forests or in agricultural land, or we had an increasing distance to forest, so increasing distance to city. Close to city, far to city. We sampled many different nine organism groups, from plants, arthropods, to birds, in village edges and village centers. And then what you can see here is that we also collected data of the so-called human well-being, which is a multidimensional metric. We try to follow the OECD description of this. You can also check your country if you want to be able to calculate the so-called Better Life Index. So this contains income, education, and so on, many different metrics to be able to calculate. We also measure the per village the global human footprint, and if you have higher footprint, So, if you have a better life in these 64 villages, then you have a much higher footprint. And we also calculated the multitrophic diversity. And obviously, multitrophic diversity was higher, 15% higher in the so-called forested villages compared to the agricultural one. There was no effect of agglomeration in contrast to my expectations on multitrophic biodiversity, although we measured only the publicly available areas. So if you would go to gardens, I expect that there would be something different. And if we have a higher global human footprint across the villages, then the multitrophic biodiversity is declining. And with this, I come to my summary. So I hope I could show you that the landscape structure, being that landscape composition or landscape configuration, drives the biodiversity patterns what you find. And these biodiversity patterns determine the ecosystem functions and also the ecosystem services, and thereby ultimately the crop health, the animal health, and our human well-being as well. So Professor Klaus Birkhofer, my colleague, led a biodiversity project where we participated, and then we written about this a long paper. What I cite here, the title of this was Relationship Between Functional Diversity and Food Production and Quality Under Ecological Intensification. And with that, I would like to thank you for your attention with students and colleagues of my groups.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.